I'm Anna Garde from Prospectus. Prospectus connects people with purpose by working in partnership with values-based organisations, recruiting senior leaders and board members into the sector. Welcome to the Leadership Impact Series. This is the podcast where we explore the impact that leaders are making through their contribution. Today, we're talking to Carol Mack, Chief Executive of the Association of Charitable Foundations. Carol has been CEO of ACF for over 6 years and was previously Deputy CEO. Her earlier career included working in the corporate sector and for the Charity Commission. Carol also brings a huge amount of governance experience, particularly in the funding space, across the UK and Europe. The Association of Charitable Foundations is the membership body for UK foundations and grant-making charities, and ACF provides policy and advocacy, research and information, and events and learning to foundations. They have over 400 members collectively, who hold assets of around 50 billion and give over 2.5 billion annually. It's lovely to see you today, Carol.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's such a pleasure for us. I'm very excited, I have to say. We feel very lucky to have you joining us today. Prospectus, we've got a strong track record of working with grant-giving organisations over many years. So we feel very privileged to hear your thoughts and your insights into the sector, both from your work with ACF, but all the amazing governance work that you do too on a broader basis. And I think particularly at this time, pivotal change in the sector and what's been going on at the moment. And we actually have an internal grants working group here. And when I said that I was meeting with you, they got very excited and they sent me lots of questions. So we've narrowed those down and I'm hoping we'll get through a couple of those at least today. But I know that there'll be a lot of people interested to hear your thoughts. So I really appreciate that. And I just wanted to reflect too on what an exciting time it is for ACF at the moment. You're about to launch your next 5-year strategy, which is great. We have heard fantastic feedback from the conference that you had in November. We just wish we could have joined you, but it sounds amazing. And I think one of the things coming out of that and just generally is how you're supporting your members with that theme of courage, and particularly looking at that leadership across the next decade. And I love the way that you're thinking of it in terms of foundations have those near perfect conditions to be courageous versus the risk of falling back into their comfort zone and failing to seize the potential of the moment. So without further ado, we'll launch into my first opening questions. And it's a large one, Carol. It's quite a broad one. So feel free to go with it where you will. But I was going to ask you that in the current climate, should funders be focused on the immediate change or the long-term impact? And it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts within that about the potential for spending down being a serious consideration as well.
Yeah, I think that's such a good question. And it's so apposite for the time that we're living in at the moment. I know that frontline charities are experiencing rising demand. They're coming out of COVID with low reserves. Public fundraising is weak and they are really worried about making ends meet. So there is a big question for foundations. How do you step up to that? Do you respond to this immediate need, or do you keep a focus on perhaps foundations' traditional preoccupation about how to make long-term differences? I think there is an argument, of course, foundations have to respond to need, and the extent to which they need to do that will be driven by their mission. Foundations have very varied missions. I think there's something around, even if the entire foundation sector switched all of its funding to respond to immediate need, the scale of that challenge is so great that, frankly, even that would not be enough. The needs are great and only government can act at that scale. So I think there is an argument for foundations to do both and. Of course, you can't live in an ivory tower. You have to be conscious of current need. But you need to be careful not to just focus on the sticking plaster, but actually look at some of the causes, not just the symptoms. And if foundations who have traditionally been the source of risk capital, opportunities to try things differently, if they're not offering that funding anymore, then who is funding the work to look at some of the long-term changes that need to be addressed for us to get out of this cycle of ongoing crisis? So I think in a way, it's sort of a false binary. I think it's not an either or, it's a both and. And you asked me about spending out as well, and I haven't forgotten about that. So for some foundations, they can't spend their capital legally. They have to preserve it, and they need to preserve it so that they're available for future generations. But again, I think mission is the key word here. If you're funding climate change, then now is the time to be acting on that, not in 10, 20, 30 years' time. So I think you need to be mission-driven in thinking about the balance of priorities between immediate need and long-term.
No, I think that's super interesting, Carol, to hear your thoughts on that. And I think one of the things that we're aware of as well with that long-term change is continuing to support that and the potential to fund policy and ensure systems change as well. Do you think that's something that is the new role of the funder to be looking at?
Well, there's no doubt that it's gained prominence in the way people are thinking about foundations, but I question whether it's really a new role. I think foundations have always done that. I mean, if you take the classic example of Joseph Rowntree Charitable Trust. It was founded in 1904. Joseph Rowntree believed that the way to remedy the injustices of the world was not to relieve their ill effects, but to strike at their roots. And that really is systems change in 1904 language. And I think there are some things that you have to do differently if you are going to do systems change. I think you have to recognise that you're part of a wider ecosystem. You have to be happy with the fact that you're going to contribute to systems change. It's going to be difficult to say, to attribute it and say, that's what we did. And I think you need to be able to, so systems change can take a while and it can be unpredictable. And you need to be prepared to persist with an issue. Get all your ducks in a row, got all your evidence, all your messaging, built all those networks. And then when the moment is right to be able to act. And foundations are very well placed to do that. They are often there for the long term. And they don't have to deliver short-term results in the way that government does or that a company does or that other players do. So they are well placed to tackle systems change, but they have to be recognise that they can't do that in isolation.
I think that's really, really a good point and also good advice for those who are now thinking about what is their role going forward. As you say, keeping in mind that mission, but is there a slight shift in that role for them as well? And I noted at the conference, you know, they were talking a lot about the changing world we're in following the death of George Floyd too, and looking at both power dynamics, but particularly equality, diversity and inclusion. And I was just wondering what progress you've seen working well, but where you also see there's some clear needs still remaining in the sector as well, Carol.
Yeah, I mean, I think the profile of the issue, the need to work on diversity, equity and inclusion has definitely changed, and that's good. I think where do I see the clearest needs still remaining? I feel we're at the beginning of this journey and there is so much more to do. So from an ACF perspective, you know, back in 2019, we published a series of reports on ambitious practice for foundations. One of those was on diversity, equity and inclusion. We took evidence from global experts on what excellent practice for foundations would look like on diversity, equity and inclusion. And then coronavirus happened. The Black Lives Matter movement came to prominence with the murder of George Floyd. And I think there's been a real shift from seeing diversity, equity and inclusion as ambitious practice to seeing it as essential practice. Yeah. I think there's been good progress on diversity. And I think there's also been good progress in terms of foundations ensuring that their grants are reaching organisations led by Black, Asian and minority ethnic-led people, and also organisations led by disabled people. And that's required foundations to monitor that more effectively and to change their processes. In terms of what more then needs to be done, I think in a way diversity is the first step and it's the easiest step. It's the equity and inclusion that is a real challenge because it requires you to change your culture. It requires you to tackle racism, disablism, anything that would exclude people from feeling celebrated and welcome in an organisation. So it's not something you can do overnight. And I think that the key thing is to take the first steps and keep going at pace. And as the Membership Association for Foundations, our role is to support foundations in that journey every step of the way.
No, it's so true. I think it's it is a working journey for a lot of organisations, isn't it? And we're often saying to our organisations we work with, we know it's a journey. We're not expecting you to have completed that journey, but tell us about what you're doing. And we're doing that at Prospectus as well. We've just had our EDI working group come together today, and it's just amazing. We're reflecting on how much progress we've made, but there's still a huge ambition to move forward. And I think that's where a lot of organisations still are. So no, that's good to see. And I think the other thing, Carol, that we feel is coming up more and more in the conversation we're having with grant givers is around investments and how they can align with ESG goals. And I'm wondering, just again, with your various hats on, where you've been seeing that dialogue moving.
Yes, I think there's been a lot more focus on investments, certainly over the past 10, 15 years. And I think that's very welcome. And you might be thinking, why are we talking about investments for foundations? Well, foundations often generate their income from their investments. So they are the powerhouse, if you like, of the future resources of that foundation. You know, in terms of the question about how can you align your investments with ESG goals, I think it's very clear that you can embrace ESG, whatever your charitable mission. And the key thing really is the investment manager you work with and the partnership with that manager. It's vital that they're committed to ESG, and it's important that when you're working with your investment manager that you dig behind the spin and really get to, are we aligned in terms of how seriously we take ESG? I'm also seeing many foundations go beyond looking at ESG and looking at how can their endowment actually forward their mission, whatever their mission is. And there are a range of ways you can do that as a foundation. You can exercise your responsibilities as a shareholder. So I've seen foundations ask questions of the companies they invest in around things like the living wage and pressuring to be paying fair living wages to employees. There are the companies you choose to invest in and those you choose not to invest in. And then there's also social investment, in which you actively invest in something that delivers your charitable mission. So there's been a big focus on investments. It's raised its profile. I think that's fantastic. If you're only thinking about your grant making, in a way, you're ignoring 96% of the assets you hold. And there's a great analogy by Jed Emerson, who's a commentator in the States. He says that if you look at a foundation and you only see its grant making, it's like looking at a horse and only seeing the manure.
I love that.
Unleash the power of the beast. You know, your endowment is a beast and you can unleash it to further your mission. And it's great that foundations are waking up to this and putting it into practice. And clearly for some missions, it's easier than others. If you're tackling poverty, well, there's a lot you can do. If you're funding changes in choral music, then it's a bit more niche and specialist. So again, it all comes back to mission and how you deploy everything you've got effectively in pursuit of that mission.
Yeah, no, I can see that. That sounds fantastic, actually. And we've touched on it a little bit, but in terms of that power dynamic concern with the philanthropy model, do you feel that those concerns have been addressed, or do you think there's still more work to do there?
Well, I think there's lots more to be done. I mean, it's clearly much more of an issue. I can remember 10, 15 years ago reading reports about power dynamics and thinking, what does that mean? Are we talking about power tools? You know, it sounded like some DIY project. I mean, now power is common currency in the foundation sector. There's a lot more awareness of that as an issue. Mentioned, for example, the Shift the Power movement. It's a global movement that's had quite a lot of prominence here in the UK too. I think that there are some broader issues at stake here. So the power dynamic conversation is often focused on the money that a foundation has and equating money with power. But actually, all the money in the world isn't going to deliver your mission. If it's just in the bank or invested in your assets, you need actors on the ground who are actually forwarding your mission for you. And so I think the best grant relationship is a mission-focused partnership. And I think that's often left out of the equation. The power doesn't always sit with the foundation. Foundation's money on its own does not achieve mission. And I think there's also, I'm a great fan of Beth Breeze,
yes,
University of Kent. And I think she's very wise when she says, you know, don't over-problematize philanthropy. I mean, yes, it's got issues that it needs to address, but the way society is structured at the moment, I think we need more philanthropy, not less philanthropy. And certainly at ACF, we're real champions of the foundation model, because at their best, foundations are the most transparent, effective way of transforming private wealth into public benefit.
Yeah, no, I think that's brilliant. We love Beth. She's brilliant. Always got lots of time for her. And sort of related to that, I suppose, is co-production. And that's become more of a conversation, I think, over the last couple of years, hasn't it? And I'm just wondering again, do you think that can be truly embedded co-production, or should we be looking beyond that?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think the extent to which you can do co-production is going to depend on your mission. You know, we've got members that fund in Syria, that fund in the Isle of Wight, that repair village halls, that do research into early year brain development. So, you know, the potential for co-production depends a bit on what your mission is. I think also you can think about co-production about different aspects of your work. So you can think about all aspects of your work: developing, setting, monitoring strategy, your governance, your grant making focus, your processes, where you make your decisions, the way you monitor, the way you report, the way you take feedback. All of those are potential arenas for co-production. You mentioned our conference on courage. And we had a great challenge at that conference. One of our speakers said, well, why this focus on co-production? Why do you congratulate yourself if you're a co-producer? Why don't you fund us to do the production and get behind us? So I think, you know, it's a really interesting conversation. And as you've alluded to, it also cuts across the mission of a foundation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I think that's really interesting, and seeing where that will go in the future as well is one to watch, I think, isn't it? And I mention it because it's particularly topical with the report out today, actually, about funders and just the way that funding for core costs has changed during the period of the pandemic. And do you think that will continue to be an ongoing trend? We have a lot of organisations say to us, we just can't get the money together for the recruitment. If only our funders would fund that for us, we can do so much more. I just wonder what your thoughts are around funders. Should they be looking at covering core costs and recruitment costs, do you think, Carol?
Yeah, I mean, I think funders are looking at this. And I think it's important for funders to be mindful of the full costs of what they're funding. And as you've said, more funders are making core unrestricted grants. I think that particularly came to the fore during COVID, when the situation was changing so rapidly that what frontline organisations would say that they needed was flexible funding.
Yeah.
And I think that is a trend that has continued. I think, again, and I sound a bit like a broken record, but it comes back to your mission and what you're trying to do. So if you are funding a non-charity, something that isn't charitable, then there are legal restrictions on only funding charitable activity. So you need to bear that in mind. If you're funding capital projects, actually, it might not be very helpful to be giving a core grant to that. That doesn't help people meet their targets for the funds they need to start a capital project. There's some great research that was done a while ago now. It was commissioned by John Ellerman Foundation, and NFP Synergy did it, and it calculated the additional value of an unrestricted grant versus a restricted grant. I can't remember the details of it, but the voluntary organisations, when asked, would rather have a smaller unrestricted grant than a larger restricted grant.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. Oh, yeah, and I hope that's a trend, as you say, that's here to stay, having sort of broken down some of those barriers through the pandemic and people seeing the value of covering those core costs as well. And I think you're right, it's really interesting, you know, across the 400 members you're working with, all those different missions, those different focuses, some very nuanced, some really broad, must be fascinating to work with. So this is a bit of an open question. I was going to ask you what challenges you see for the sector coming up in the next 3 years. I know that's a very broad one, Carol. Not sure if you feel you can answer that.
Well, you said that we're launching our new strategy, and this is exactly the sort of things we've been thinking about. So our new purpose is to strengthen foundations to rise to the challenges of our time. So we've been thinking a lot and talking a lot with our members about what they see those challenges are. And you, in your questions, have touched on many of them already. So one of the obvious challenges of our time is the cost of living crisis, inequality, the after effects of the pandemic. That's a challenge, and we've spoken about it. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, that's a challenge. Investments and how you deploy them, that's a challenge. Climate change is a big one, and foundations are thinking hard about how they can act on climate, whatever their mission. And we support foundations in that through our funder commitment on climate change. So happy to talk more about that. And then the fifth challenge that I'd add and we've identified is around grant-making process. I think because of the scarcity of funds for frontline charities, foundations are a growing and important piece of the funding pie. And the demand for foundation funding is growing, and they're coming under greater scrutiny as a result of all of that. And I think there's really a challenge for foundations to think about how they minimise the impact on those they fund of their grant-making processes. And I think that's one of the other challenges we've got.
So we've talked about those challenges, Carol, and it would be really interesting to hear how ACF is supporting their members with those challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is what members have told us that they want us to address. And it's also, frankly, what wider stakeholders have told us that foundations need to address. So we didn't just talk to our own members. I mean, for ACF, we're very clear that our role in all of this is as a membership body. And we want to support our foundations to rise to the challenges of their time. We want to continue the work we began with Stronger Foundations to support foundations to achieve excellent practice. We want to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion for our sector. And also for ACF, you know, we need to be the change we want to see, and we've got work we need to do there. We want to strengthen connections between foundations and beyond the foundation sector to catalyse collaborations. And we want to sustain a landscape where foundations can thrive. That's partly around advocacy, and it's also about sharing inspiring stories about the impact that foundations can have.
No, I can see that's very broad. It sounds like you've done a lot of work into that strategy, and it's so topical at the moment, which is brilliant. But yes, do you tell us more about the climate change side? That'd be fascinating to hear more about.
Yeah, well, I think it's become more apparent over the past several years that climate change isn't some environmental concern. Yeah. You know, it's a poverty issue. It's a justice issue. It impacts on places. It impacts on health. And it's a concern that gives us all anxiety. But it can be difficult to translate the concern you feel about climate into your professional concerns at work.
Yeah.
And foundations tend to think in the long term. And in the long term, climate change is going to be the driver that impacts on the context in which foundations work. So we wanted to provide a framework for foundations to think through the implications of climate change for what they do. I mean, clearly, what they give grants for is important, how they support their grantees, what they do with their investments, and also just learning about the impact of the climate crisis on their own missions. Yeah. And I think it's important as well to be transparent about this. So we host the Funder Commitment on Climate Change. 100 funders based in the UK have signed that commitment. It was developed by a group of our members and launched at a conference, and we now host it. And as part of that commitment, you commit to publishing annually the progress that you've made in embedding work on climate change into your work. So we can see from that how foundations are thinking about climate and bringing it into their activities, whatever their mission. And that climate change initiative, which was begun by a small group of our members, because ACF is a member of international networks of philanthropy support bodies, that idea has spread very rapidly. And several European countries now support their own members with a funder commitment on climate change. There's one in France, there's one in Spain, there's one in Italy. And there's actually a global funder commitment on climate change that was launched at COP27. The good news is that you can translate your anxiety into something positive. And the other good news is that foundations are doing this in a thoughtful way. They're not just picking up the need to act and passing it on to grantees without any support. It's about leading the way in a gentle way and recognizing that for many frontline organizations right now, that the challenge right now is on cost of living and need, and how do you maintain a focus on the long term given the short term need? And I guess that brings us back to where we started this conversation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oh gosh, Carol, it's been so interesting speaking to you, and I can't wait to see the strategy when it comes out as well. I hope it goes fantastically well with the launch, and we really appreciate your time today. So thanks so much for joining us.